This is the Metacast, June 11th, 2007.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters!
This is the Metacast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up! Here's today's show with the Podmedic, Jamie Davis!
Well, good day and welcome to the Medicast. I'm Jamie Davis, the Podmedic, and I want to welcome all of you to this podcast. If you're a brand new listener, welcome to the show and check out the website over at medicast.com. For those of you that have been listening for a long time and contributing by email, by comments on the website, by your voicemail comments, I want to thank you for all of the effort and time you put into making sure I stay up to date on the issues that are important to you. This is a community effort, and I really rely very much on the input of all of the listeners. I need you to tell me what it is you want me to work on. I have issues, the things that I try to keep up with, and that's one of the reasons I started the show, was to find a way to keep myself up on medical issues, on training, and on my general medical knowledge. So I hope that that is providing the same resource for you that I hope to provide for myself at the same time. I want to take a quick second here before I move into the listener mail to thank a specific group of listeners. And this is the group of listeners who have reviewed the Medicast on the iTunes store. I want to thank you. I really appreciate it. And I want to urge the rest of you. First of all, I'm not just shopping for compliments, although I certainly appreciate all of the kind words that were left by the 6 reviewers over at the iTunes store on the Medicast page. But I do want to urge you to put an honest assessment up there. If there's something about the show you don't like, that's okay. And you don't have to give me 5 out of 5 stars. You can give me whatever you feel is appropriate. But by putting a review up there, it does keep the Medicast high in the ratings on the iTunes site and enables other listeners to find the show easier. So go ahead if you'd like to. There's a link in the show notes to head directly on over there. And in the meantime, I want to thank, and I'm going to use the screen names here that have been left. There's no real names left here. They leave whatever their iTunes identifier is. Desert Geek, AFD767NYR9935, New Jersey EMD, Fever Dog, and Digital Logic. I want to thank all of you for the kind words you left for me over at the iTunes store. And I think I'll jump right on into the news. First of all, I got a couple of emails from some providers with regards to Remazicon. We had talked about Remazicon and how it was an antidote for benzodiazepine overdose, but I had made a statement that I didn't think it was carried on many EMS services, and that it was because of the number of side effects that the medication has, that it really just limited its functionality in the field for benzo overdose. I mean, somebody's snowed enough that they're having trouble breathing. We can breathe for them, get them to the hospital, let the doc administer the Remazicon. And that was my statement at the time. However, I got 2 emails, one from listener James and one from listener Richard, both from Virginia. And one of them said that they have Remazicon in their bag of tricks. And the other one said that they used to carry it in their bag of tricks, but it was taken off the ambulance because it was infrequently used and because of the nasty side effects. So we have 2 different units. One used to carry it and now no longer does. And now another group in Virginia that is still using it for benzodiazepine overdose in the field. And James and Richard, I want to thank you very much for sharing that information with us here so that we are aware of what some protocols allow us to do and what some don't. So that's good news for all. And thank you for taking the time to respond back to the show. I also got an email from listener Ted, who was kind enough to send me some links on some stuff he found on the internet for EMS training. Ted, thank you very much. I'm going to check those links out, and I may put some of them up on the website, because we had discussed a little bit about resources for EMS training. There are a lot of websites out there that offer continuing ed training for a variety of different prices, And, you know, you have to kind of make the decision based upon the economics of what your service either reimburses you for or what you can afford on how you do your continuing education for your registry, whether it's a state registry or a national registry position. But it's something that we should be aware of and get out there and take a look at. And so I thank you, Ted, for sending me links for that. And all of you, for any other links you might have, please feel free to keep sending them in for news items and things like that. I may have already seen them, and that's okay. But I do try to respond to you on every email I get just to let you know that I got the information that you sent to me. Make sure you keep all the listener email coming in. You can reach me here at podmedic@mac.com, and I do appreciate everything that I get from you guys. Let's jump right on into this week's news. I found a great article over at my Yahoo links about the Emergency Medicine Learning and Resource Center and EMS Magazine that are getting together to host the nation's largest EMS competition. This is going to present real-world scenarios and give us an opportunity to try out our assessment skills, our planning skills, and our general problem-solving skills. And this has been released that EMS Magazine will be getting together and putting this together for state and regional competitions. And this is pretty exciting, something that they're going to be discussing and talking about when they have a local competition at the EMS Expo coming up in October of this year in Orlando, Florida. But it's something that they want to put together on a national basis. And I think that's really very exciting. It's going to give all of us an opportunity to get out there and maybe train for a local competition that'll move the winner of that competition up to a state competition and then on into regional competitions where people will be able to come together and travel to the EMS Expo where they can try out their skills at the national level. And that's just really exciting. So I hope that this competition continues to go and happen, and we'll find out more about it as it moves along in the process. And as I find out more about this, I'll let you know. But you can check out a link to the story in the show notes and find out more about it there. So, are you pushing hard enough when you do CPR? Well, that's the question that was asked by a Purdue University study that came out recently. And they tested 104 untrained CPR adults and 83 firefighters who are supposed to be professional providers and able to perform adequate CPR. And strangely enough, the studies found that more than 60% of the untrained adults failed to push hard enough to provide adequate compressions. And worse yet, only 60% of the 83 firefighters actually applied the necessary force to provide adequate compressions for CPR. And, you know, this is the key thing that came up in this year's or last year's update to the AHA guidelines. We really need to be focusing on adequate BLS skills in the field. BLS is going to save a cardiac arrest patient a lot faster than anything we can do on the ALS level. And so it reminds those of us that are paramedics to focus more on what's going on with CPR. And it renews my strong belief that EMTs are exceedingly important in any ALS situation. EMT basics and first responders help the paramedics provide adequate care by doing the essential BLS skills that are needed. And this is just the case that this study shows when providing CPR for patients. These people need to have adequate CPR performed, and that is a BLS skill, adequate compressions. And something I tell people when I train them, whether they're lay people or experienced providers, is if you think you're pushing hard enough, you probably aren't. So push harder, push faster, push deeper. Adequate compressions early in CPR administration are really the only thing that's going to be a strong predictor of end outcome. When the ALS providers get there, when you get your AED hooked up, when the defibrillation is administered, or when ALS drugs are administered on board, these are the things that the heart uses to get back on track. But it has to be adequately perfused. The body has to have adequate perfusion to essential organs like the brain and the kidneys. And unless this adequate blood pressure is provided by good CPR, they're just not going to have the effect that is needed. So we need to get out there and provide good quality care to the patients. And one of those things is that during a cardiac arrest, we need to administer good enough compressions. I always recommend that when you have a cardiac arrest, somebody be put in charge of watching the BLS skills. And it can be anybody that's trained in CPR for the healthcare provider. This person's going to oversee adequate mask ventilation. This person's going to oversee adequate compression. And this person's going to be the team leader in charge of swapping out personnel so that we can get new people on the chest every 2 to 3 minutes so we make sure that adequate compressions are being performed. You know, I talk about prevention all the time and that it's a key issue that we need to really focus on in EMS. And this is another article I found that talks about prevention issues, especially with children in middle school ages or ages 11 to 14 years old. When looking in a study at whether they were using alcohol or not, there were some astounding responses. And I think we all are pretty aware that children are using alcohol at younger and younger ages. 17% at the start of sixth grade, or around 11 years old, use alcohol, and nearly twice as many, or more than twice as many, at 41% by the end of eighth grade, or at around 14 years old, were alcohol users. But one of the things the study did find was that these students were not getting alcohol from commercial sources. These people were getting alcohol from home. And as we enter the time of the year in my area where students are going to be off school and home by themselves while their parents are at work, I have to really wonder about the wisdom for parents to keep alcohol readily accessible in their home when their children are being left unattended. And I think this is really where that focus is. I don't have anything against alcohol in general. I have an occasional beer myself. I've been known to exceed in excess in earlier times of my life, although I've gotten some of that under control. But it doesn't mean that you can't have alcohol, but it does mean that if you have children at home, maybe you need to find a way to secure that alcohol so that they don't start using alcohol in the house. And I guess that's just something we need to kind of be aware of. And this might be another education and prevention issue that you can put in your bag of tricks when you get out to talk to community organizations, talk to parents groups. Maybe instead of just going to the schools to talk to the students, maybe you can arrange to talk with the PTA members or with teachers or with other persons out there involved with the handling and taking care of youth, whether it's parents, whether it's church groups, whether it's any other organization. I think this is something that really needs to be addressed. And as a prevention issue, sometimes that kind of thing falls right into our laps. Finally, this week, I found an article that talks about the hospitals in the state of New Jersey putting more and more of a focus on stroke and getting out there and designating specific hospitals as stroke treatment centers. This is something that I touched on, I guess, back in April's Medicast Live, where I had several representatives from hospital stroke treatment centers, one from Rochester, New York, one from my own area here in Maryland, and they talked with myself and some other EMS providers about specifically what stroke centers did, how they worked, and how EMS providers can do more to work with them. So if you haven't checked out that episode in April of the Medicast Live, head over and do so. There's a lot of great information on how you can access stroke centers and what to expect when you have a local facility that becomes a stroke center. Basically, what stroke centers do is they designate a stroke team. This is a group of people that are going to be active in the hospital 24 hours a day. They may not all be based in the emergency department, but what happens is when a possible stroke patient is brought in, or when we notify them by med radio that a stroke patient is on the way in, they mobilize. The team leader comes down, helps to immediately assess the patient, and they have CT on board ready to go right away so that they get the stroke patient in for diagnostic CT to make sure that they're not experiencing a hemorrhagic stroke. If not, they immediately begin administering clot-busting medications to break up the thrombolytic stroke that's going on in their brain. They find the location, they quickly get thrombolytics on board, and when stroke centers and stroke teams are utilized, we find that patients have a great deal of success. Stroke is such a debilitating injury, and it really is an injury to the brain. And when stroke happens, these patients will recover from their stroke. They won't die from their stroke necessarily, but without a stroke team or without rapid intervention by the administration of thrombolytics, these patients have lifelong disabilities. By utilizing stroke teams, by treating stroke as an immediate problem and a brain injury, just like we do with trauma, just like we do with ST elevation MIs, by treating patients with stroke like a similar time-emergent medical emergency, we are able to get these patients quickly to the hospital, get them the treatment they need, and many of them have nearly full recoveries or completely full recoveries because of rapid intervention by EMS and consequently transport to the appropriate facility. In this situation, the local designated stroke center. So check out your local hospitals. Find out if they're putting on some kind of an initiative like this. Find out if they're looking into it. Part of the Stroke Center initiative is an outreach to local EMS. So make sure you guys are all involved in the process. And that's going to wrap up this week's news portion of the MedicCast podcast. And the next section I'm really happy to have provided for you. I was able to line up an interview with Claiborne, who represented all of us recently as a Star of Life winner for the American Ambulance Association and was sent to Washington, D.C. for a whirlwind tour of different sightseeing sites, as well as some education about how to discuss things with our lawmakers. And she actually got to go on to Capitol Hill and meet her own lawmakers, her senators, and or her congressmen. And you'll have to listen to the interview yourself. With is a very energetic speaker and really was happy to share this information with you. And I think the thing you can take away from this interview is really a sense of how important it is for us to get out and educate our lawmakers. We can't just assume that because they're the local administrator in charge, the local mayor, the local county commissioner, the local county executive, or your state representatives, that just because they sign off on bills regarding EMS and fireside type operations doesn't mean that they even understand a portion of it. They're going under, most of the time, recommendations from organizations that hopefully represent you well, but they would love to hear from individuals. So without further ado, I'm going to jump right on into that interview with. I'll let her enthusiasm speak for itself. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I am privileged to be here with Claiborne, who was a representative of all of us in Washington, D.C. recently. With, how are you tonight?
I'm fabulous. Thank you.
Great. With, before we get started in with what exactly got you to Washington, can you tell us a little bit about your EMS background, what got you into EMS, and a little bit of what your qualifications are and where that's going right now?
Absolutely. I am EMT basic in Alabama. I started about 3 years ago. I wanted to do it since I was in high school, compliments of Peter Canning's books. And I went to a small private college here. And right after I was finished, I went to basic school. And I wanted to work for about a year, year and a half before I started paramedic school because I just think there's an important gap in going from basic to medic. I think a good basic makes no one's a perfect starting paramedic, but I think it kind of gives you a better idea in all around EMS care. So I wanted to do that, and now I am in the middle of paramedic school. I wanted to take paramedic school quicker than the 2 years it usually takes down here, so I'm doubled up on classes right now. So I'm doing rotations and in class.
My goodness.
In class, yes.
No wonder. No wonder you're never home.
Yeah.
Because we had trouble catching up for this interview, but I'm glad I did catch up with you. So I won't take too much more of your time tonight because I know it's your night off, so to speak. So you're working as an EMTB and going to school right now, and you were able to I guess, can you tell us a little bit about how you were recognized for, I guess, excellence, because that's what this award was about. Tell us a little bit about the award and how you found out about it.
Absolutely. Actually, just to preface this, I think it's important. One of the things that was just overwhelming to me when I went up there is that they wanted to honor 105 of us that were up there. And, you know, there was just so much that all these people had to offer. And I felt like I didn't know why I was there, because I've only been doing it for 3 years and some people have been in it for 20 or 25 years. But really, the experience gave me an overall sense of wanting to belong to this community, because it was just a great sampling of people from the country, and it just really made me proud to be a part of the profession, because sometimes we don't get the best rap and we don't get paid the best and this and that, but, you know, these people are truly proud just to be there, and I just think it spoke for everyone in EMS, not just the people that were there, that people really do care about us in Washington, and people want to stand up for us, and there are people who want to stand behind us and get us all the things that we need, so it's just really nice. But I was personally recognized, and I don't want this to sound too textbook, because we had to come up with the reason why, but I am more of like a quirky personality, and when I went to my operation, I was employed at, I was sent through American Medical Response, who okay. I'm working with part-time right now. I was full-time there. It was my first major EMS job, and I think from the beginning, I just dove right in, loved it, couldn't get enough, landed on my feet, and then my specific operation went through a lot of hardship in losing supervisors and FTOs. And so they really needed people to step up, but they didn't have the time or this or that resource to train the people to do it. So they really just needed people to step up. And, you know, our response time started going downhill. And my husband also worked there, and he was part of the management team. And he would tell me about it over dinner. We talked about this, this, and this, and this response time. And my question was, why don't we know about it? We're the ones driving the ambulances. We need to know response times aren't where they need to be, because we aren't getting feedback. So we came up with a system of, like, if you think of, like, people raising money, like the thermometer shape, like filling it up to the certain level. Well, we posted that at the end of every day and showed the compliance on time, cancels, amount of calls run, and posted it in all the common areas by the time clock, by the mailboxes, and in the crew room, so that when people are coming in there chatting this or not that, they could just glance at it and be like, we rock, we're so good. And the reason response times are important to that operation is because there's three private ambulance services. So, you know, you want to kind of be on your game, and no one wants to be the worst. So I thought it was important we take that, because I know these people really do care about what we do, but from management knowing about it to the street members knowing about it, you know, it was just, so I kind of stepped in and took care of that. I also helped with education and quality assurance stuff. And so nomination time came around and someone nominated me.
That's
and
awesome.
Then it was out of Mobile's hands.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, the name of the award is?
The Star of Life. It's given by the American Ambulance Association. So it's not given by AMR. I was just nominated through AMR.
Right. That's yeah. Really fantastic. And, you know, we really are called to be leaders in each call that we go on. But and so it's not surprising that when there's a vacuum in leadership in our organizations, somebody generally, in most cases, is willing or able to step up and fill that void. And it sounds like you did a fabulous job helping out to take care of that issue.
I wanted to.
Now you have your blog over at iHeartEMS.
I do.
And that's a great blog. And for those of you out there, you can link to it off my website. There's links in the blog roll on the left-hand side. You'll see links to that blog. And it's great to see your posts on there and your comments and things. And I remember watching the post come up when you put it up there that you'd gotten this award. It was really fabulous. You went to D.C. And how long were you there?
A week.
Wow.
And
tell me a little bit about the timeline from when you got there. Was it a lot of meetings? Was it sightseeing? I mean, what was involved with your trip?
The whole trip, I mean, they were so great to us. We arrived, we stayed in a very, very, really nice hotel. And they had meetings, socials, sightseeing stuff. They had a little bit of everything. The first night it was just like get to know you. They had, there was my company that sent me had events, and then American Ambulance Association had events as well. So it was kind of playing both sides, but they had fun little games like cards with your picture on it, and you had to like trade with everyone else, and it was a prize, so you could get to know each other. There was like socials, and then the next day the business kind of got started, and we had this really, really awesome guy come and teach us how to talk to our congressional members about politics. No one asked us if we were uncomfortable to talk about politics, but they did educate us about bills that would affect EMS at the time, so that when we went to meet with Congress, which shockingly they did ask me, what can I do to help you? So I didn't think any of them would when the guy told us, but we had some really great training in how to handle that, and just how to talk to them and be confident and not play it down that we had won the award. And so we just talked about those bills. We did some skits, which also helped to get to know each other. And then there were some awards banquets. We had the doctor that's the head of Homeland Security come and speak to us. All kinds of things. We got to take our picture on the Capitol steps. And then we had a big American Ambulance Association banquet. And then my company had a banquet as well. It was really fun.
So you had a very fun-filled week. And I guess the thing that I want to know most about is how, when you met, now did you meet with just your representatives, or was there a mix, was there a meet-up with many?
I did. I met with mine, and then just impromptu meetings with others, like bumping into them in the hall. They would recognize your uniform, because we did wear our Star of Life uniform, which is just your basic navy pants, a long sleeve shirt, says Star of Life on the patch and stuff. But they would bump into you and be like, oh, what are you guys here for again? And start chatting with you about it. And so I met a lot of people that way. But yeah, I met with my two state senators and then my House representative from my district.
And what was their reception of, did you have any particular item that you felt strongly enough about to talk with them? Or were they... did you have prompts that you were given? I mean, was there something that you really had a passion about that you wanted to talk about?
I was here for Katrina, so disaster stuff was at the forefront of my mind. We are looking at some bills to help out with fuel taxes and stuff in a disaster type thing, but that's more of a small issue that no one has. I mean, no one's going to, I'm sure someone will, but I just can't see anyone voting against that other than, like, money reasons. But they didn't prompt us. It was more of an education, because the American Ambulance Association is a private. It is for private ambulance services, and Medicare is such an important part of that. The biggest thing that we learned about, which I did think was important, and I didn't know this, but when a private company takes a Medicare patient, they don't even get refunded half of what it costed to take the patient. So it was a lot about a bill that's in there now. It's a 5% increase on your what you would get paid for Medicare. Mm-hmm. And they're looking at a few other things, like if you had to go out of your service area and stuff like that.
Right.
But that was about it. I didn't honestly think they were going to ask me any of that. And then... they did. So I was kind of like, the guy at the meeting told us to say, sponsor my bill. And so I said, sponsor my bill. And he was like, what bill? And I was like, yeah, you got me there. But they had someone with us to kind of help us with that. Because, again, they were not asking us to advocate it. They had sent someone with us in case they wanted information. Thank goodness they had the forethought to do that, because I was so nervous when they asked me that. I was like, oh, I don't even know what bill. I don't know.
Well, you know, it's and that actually is not just a bill that's important to private ambulance services, because in much of the country, with so many volunteer services running in rural areas, my company really, both the fire and the EMS side, survive on our EMS billing. I mean, it's a significant portion of our budget, and that Medicare rate is set for everybody. And so when it goes up for the private ambulance companies, for the interfacility transport companies that are out there as well, it goes up for everybody. And it is a vital funding portion of what we do. And it got pretty butchered a few years ago, and it's starting to creep back up again thanks to legislation like this. So it's really important. And it, you know, that means more salaries for us. It means better equipment in our ambulances. It means a whole lot better patient care in the long run, because we'll be able to better
have ethnography for Mr. Peter Canning to teach people how right. He's so adamant about that. And the only, not necessarily opposition that bill is facing, from the insight that I got from being up there, but there are some people that want to go higher than 5%, and not a lot of people are crazy about that for right now, and it would be a temporary 5% increase. But there is some sort of increase that we did receive in the past that's getting ready to go away. So it's almost like a cut, it's almost like a break even of what we're getting right now. It's a small step, but yeah, I am learning that it doesn't just affect private companies, because, like I said, I'm part-time with my private company right now. I just started with a county agency.
With other than the billing issues that are coming up with Medicare and things we're all very aware of, if you have anything to do with billing in your companies, what other issues did the congressmen or the senators seem to be interested in?
They asked lots of questions regarding to our everyday job. What's your longest what's your longest response time? How many calls do you run a day? What kind of shifts do you have? What kind of calls do you normally run? Is it always bad and gory like it is on ER? What kind of equipment do you carry? One time I saw a sonogram machine on an ambulance on a TV show, and I didn't know you carried those. We don't. We don't. Had no idea, but we don't. Sorry. Just everyday kind of stuff. What's in your ambulance? They didn't know we took people out of town. Lots of different everyday questions.
And that kind of highlights, I think, the need for us to really get out in our communities and educate people, and start with our lawmakers, our local administrators, our county representatives and things like that. Has this generated a drive for you to do more outreach and education now that you've seen how ignorant our primary lawmakers are and as far as how our service works?
Absolutely. We are actually kind of as a result. I have just, like I mentioned, started working with my county, and they are having, we've been working together to make a free CPR class at a high school. It's going to be in about 2 weeks, and we have all the city councilmen coming. So they'll get to take the class and, you know, meet with their constituents, just kind of hang out for a couple of hours. It's just a heart saver. American Heart Saver, but I just think it's better than nothing. And I've always wanted to do like a major teaching, because like you've said a million times, you know, American Heart has said a million times, when someone needs CPR, the compressions are the most important thing. And if we can teach someone how to do that, then, you know, and we're going to teach in an area that is, I mean, not necessarily a long response, but for a lot of the companies around here, it is a greater than 10 to 12 minute response area. So
without,
you know,
CPR, you have no viability if there's no CPR performed.
Right. So it's going to do nothing but help. And I think that's going to, I mean, we're bringing ambulances. People are going to get to see that kind of stuff. They're going to have a it's not free. I think it's $200, an EMT basic class at one of the, in the north of our county, there's lots of chemical plants. And one of the chemical plants is putting a bunch of their employees through EMT Basic, but they're offering it to the community for $200, which I paid like $1,200 for mine. So that's a bargain. So we, you know, we're letting them know about stuff like that. Just trying to, because also, you know, we need people to come work in EMS. Not a lot of people signing up for that. So anything we can do, I don't know, but it definitely has motivated me, even if it's at the very, very extremely local level of the very small mayor of a very small outer-lying portion of the county, but everything helps.
Well, you know, and there's things that local lawmakers can do to make our lives a little easier, and it doesn't have to be much. You know, you're right. I mean, things like getting reduced cost EMT classes or some kind of scholarship program so people can get that training for free is just an amazing service, and it requires education. People just don't understand how our training goes, how much it costs us out of pocket to get that training. And
yeah.
It sounds like a good, you're on the right track there. Maybe you're destined for public office.
I don't think so. I mean, I would, if anything, I think in the very far future, I see myself, if I was dealing with public office, I would want to be on the EMS advocacy side of things, but I don't think I'd want to be in public office. I did see a lot of people up in Washington that have pretty cool jobs. They get to walk around and talk about EMS all day. And I wouldn't mind that because I can talk, but I like that. You know, I went to school for psychology, so I would like to eventually end up in a critical incident kind of thing for EMS personnel, but we'll see.
Well, and that, you know what, the neat thing about what we do is that we can provide additional training for ourselves to move into different areas because it's backbreaking work. And if you're in this job for a long-term career, eventually you need to move into, not maybe completely off the street, but, you know, eventually you need to move into management. And of course, you have career aspirations. You'd like to be able to influence the next group of providers.
Absolutely.
Now, is your brother involved in EMS in some way? Or?
Well, my family is a very specifically special topic because we grew up insanely close. He was born without an immune system and was very, very, very sick for a very long time. And he is on a FDA trial, has been for years, and he's 17 years old, goes to high school, he works as a lifeguard, he has a job, he's completely normal, except for 1 4-hour subcutaneous infusion a week. And, I mean, he has his health run-ins here or there, but it's been amazing. And, you know, I told you in the beginning, I read Peter Canning's books. I'm a big reader. I read his books in high school, and I told my parents, I want to do this. And my brother was always in a fire truck, but now he's a senior starting in August, and he's planning to go to EMT school his last semester of high school as a dual enrollment type deal, and then he turns 18 that May, and he'll be able to sit for registry. And I don't think he can wait any longer. He wants to use EMS as a footing to be like a trauma surgeon, though.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely not.
There's a lot of great doctors out there that started as EMTs and then became paramedics.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and they'll tell you the reason they're doing what they do or they're good at what they do is because they started out. They know from the beginning of the call to when they get to this, you know, the OR, what this patient's had been through. You know, they've been there. They've treated that patient. So, absolutely. I completely agree. But yes, he'll be involved in EMS. He listens to the Medicast.
Yeah, he sent me an email, and I remembered as I was talking to you that, you know what, I got an email from his brother.
I know.
So I guess I'm going to, as we wrap up here, I want to ask you this question. Is there anything that you would tell the Medicast listeners or share with the Medicast listeners about how they can communicate better with their elected representatives?
Start small, because not everyone can go to Washington, D.C. and sit in their office. I'm sure you can, but it might take months, and that's lots of money, and I don't make that much money, so I don't know who it is. If you're making that much money, email me on my blog. But I think it's so important because it's like a pyramid. I mean, if you start at the bottom's going to talk to the middle's going to talk to the top if we make enough noise. So I just think anything you can do, start small, especially include your community, because if you show the community, this is what we need. This is really what we need to be 100% or to be 150% or 200%, the community is going to start making noise. And, you know, if like the CPR class where city councilmen are coming, they're going to see the community and they're going to see us and they're going to see that we all need each other and this is what we need to get it done. And I think that's the best way right now.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you very much for your time, both here with the Medicast and also the time you took to represent all of us in Washington and to help educate some of our elected representatives about what we do and how we do it. I'd like to invite you to come back on anytime if you have an issue you'd like to talk about. And how can we get to your blog again? Do you remember the address?
It's iheartms.blogspot.com.
Excellent.
Yep, and thank you very much for including me. And anyone going to paramedic school, memorize your national registry sheets before the end.
Yeah, it's that I'm going to be putting something together. That's one of my goals this summer, since I'm not taking any classes for nursing. I finish up through the next two semesters next year, but I am working on putting together something for both BLS and ALS national registry sheets. I've been doing the little segments about monthly here on the Medicast, but I'm going to try to put something together maybe that is available on CD or something that, you know, for a nominal fee we can get out to people. Try to put all that information in one spot so people can just get it and run through those sheets. I think, like you said, if you listen to these things while you're, you know, home doing chores or driving around on errands, it'll help reinforce the skills that you're putting into effect in the field.
Oh, and you learn something new every time.
Absolutely. All right, Wythe, I want to thank you very much for being a great interview here on the Medicast.
Thank you.
I want to thank Wythe again for taking time out of her busy schedule. She's doubling up on classes and clinicals right now, and any of us who have done anything approaching that understand exactly how harried and busy she is. So I appreciate her taking the time to share with us on her trip to D.C. and also head on over to the iHeart EMS blog at iheartems.blogspot.com. So head on over there. There's a link in the show notes as well as a link on the Medicast website on the left-hand side there. And I think that's going to wrap up the show this week, a full episode, certainly, of the Medicast. I want to thank all of you for checking out the show and staying tuned and keeping in touch with all of your great comments and emails and information. Reminders for you are that you can reach the Medicast at podmedic@mac.com. You can also call in directly to the voicemail line at 941-306-3342. You can leave a voicemail message there. If you do, please remember to leave your email address at the very end. So if I have any questions about your comments, I can email you back and get everything clarified. But I'd love to have your voicemail comments to share with the other listeners and questions as well. So thank you very much for sending in those comments by the voicemail line. You can also always comment over at the Medicast site directly, over at www.medicast.com. And on the blog there, on any of the posts that I put up during the week, you can leave a comment. Just go to the bottom of each individual posting, and there'll be a link there to go ahead and leave a comment or a reply. Go ahead and click on that link. If you're already registered at the site, you can go ahead and leave your comments, and it'll be posted immediately. If this is your first time commenting, it does have to come to me by email just so I can approve you. That way I weed out some of the spammers out there. I will wrap up as I always do with some excellent PodSafe music from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. This week, a little something different. My musical tastes are pretty eclectic, and I like a lot of different styles of music. And this week's just a little mixing it up a little bit, I guess you'd like to say. This is from a band called Red Molly. The song is called Darlin' Corey, and it's a little bit of a bluegrassy, folksy kind of song. If you like what you hear, you can go ahead and check out the links in the show notes for the band's site, as well as a link that, if you'd like to, you can go ahead and click on and go ahead directly to iTunes and purchase the song. So you can use that link to do that as well. Without further ado, I'll let the music take over and wrap up the show. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. Until next time, scene safety, BSI.
Dig a hole, dig a hole in the meadow. We're gonna lay Darlin' Corey down.
Wake up, Darlin' Corey. What makes you sleep so sound? The revenue officers are coming. They're gonna tear your steel house down. Well, the first time I seen Darlin' Corey, she was sitting by the banks of the sea. Had a 44 round her body.
Dig a hole in the meadow. We're gonna lay Darlin' Corey down.